Teresa Brennan, who passed away quite recently, is also a feminist theorist. She actually works with the term affect, but kind of not in her own way. And she has this concept called discernment, which is, I think, links a lot to the Audre Lorde stuff that I started with. And she's kind of saying that instead of thinking about, from Mizumi, the moment at which the things we feel get named, there's a capture, right? And that emotion almost becomes, in a way, a bad thing, I think, in Mizumi's text. Or this idea that if we want to say all emotions, naming all emotions is bad, and we should never give name to emotion. There's kind of, I think, dangers associated with that, and that she kind of offers a different way of thinking about it, which is that what we're actually trying to do is to learn how to discern, how to make sense of all of our feelings. And what language does is gives us new ways to think about all the ways that we feel, and new ways of talking about them. So rather than seeing signification necessarily as a negative, seeing signification as a process and a political process. So how we decide to how we think about and how we communicate about how we feel is a political question, as well as a question of language. So let's see. Does someone want to read the one that says the hardening of the affects? Not all at once. It's the third one down.
The hardening of the affects is a social affair, so their transformation requires political as well as personal attention. In political as well as personal cases, changing the disposition of the affects from passivity-inducing and raging judgments of the other to love or affection requires practice and knowledge. The understanding and deployment of feelings is critical in both endeavors as the means for discerning effects and reconnecting with the original knowledge of the senses.
So that kind of makes sense. It's basically kind of what I just said prior to that. So that, basically that it's a process. It's hard. We have to, work at it. And I really love just in the next one, she kind of says, symbolization is the means for transformation as the process whereby energy locked up in an alphabet in which it cannot speak is kind of released back in. So she has this kind of idea that we literally, when we don't have the words and we don't know how to communicate what we do, that we, our feelings get actually locked kind of inside of our body, and so they kind of need that we have to use language to release them, but we don't necessarily have to use these hardened, stiff emotional language or these words that we already have are so loaded. That part of the process, which is where I think it links back to Audre Lorde and poetry and poetics, is to come up with new myths, new metaphors, new symbols, new kinds of ways of getting the ideas out, because again, that's what opens up new feelings. So it's not necessarily that the ideas change, like smash the state's bad, but that what kinds of other ways are there for kind of conveying that information, that idea, to open up other possibilities of feeling and connection around it.
A screen of graphics that directed 148 nationalities in an airport grounds for the services. And obviously language, written word, isn't effective in that, and therefore graphic images is that's one of the things I'm interested in talking about.
Yeah.
It crosses so many boundaries and so many topics.
Yeah.
Other topics can look at it and know what you mean. I find that a more productive topic with words. Down to my own skill is what we've got to learn.
For sure. That's interesting. We could think about in terms of should there be more photo essays, more things that are actually less based on words in thinking about this sort of how we talk emotions.
Did we do it all collectively? I mean, that part depends on which case you're going
to. Yeah, that's true. Which you don't see, I think. I think that you see almost more, I think, in older stuff than recently, as also probably because things are a lot of internet-based alternative media, but I find that you see less sketches, like less drawings than in stuff that I've looked through from the 60s, 70s, 80s. I don't know if you...
Well, in the alternative media.
Like kind of in, because there's a big move from print culture to web culture. And in the print culture stuff, you get a lot more hand illustrations, cartoon things, like political cartoons, like all the kinds of papers had that stuff. And I feel like there's a little bit less of that. I see less of that. But
it's not hardcore enough, it doesn't need to be on it. So some of us are trying to train some of these aspects, some cultural aspects, rather than just get on with the stakes. And how you illustrate both of those concepts are actually using different art forms. If I were to put up a fine art painting and scan it and stick it on in the media, it would cause no end emotion. What the bloody hell is that doing? Irrespective of the context and the intent.
Yeah. That's a problem.
It is. And some of this is on the other side of the photographing wide range of things, cultural matters. I'm not actually going over to do the Chinese thing. I should put that on Indonesia.
Absolutely.
Being held up in these meetings, the Chinese community and nothing, with their arts and crafts, and how others need to be involved in it. They're a colourful country, but they need to be lauded.
I'm quite interested in that because I study theatre design at Trent, and there have been more subtle ways, like you say, but something different about physically reading a paper. Maybe it was more appropriate to put more sketch-based things or painterly things. Maybe there's more focus on film on the internet as well, and some third-hand sources, so you can see the film quickly on YouTube. So there's maybe film and writing like those in the project.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Okay, I'll get to the groups just in a bit. Stop talking. So then the last kind of... Oh, the other two I'll just talk about them. This is an older text by Bell Hooks, who's also a Black American feminist. And she kind of just has this idea, which other people have said many times, this is just one way of saying it, that kind of links in the sort of genealogy I'm creating, but is this idea that of speaking from the margin, so we're speaking from marginalized communities, and that then our language practices are developed, our representational practices, not just language, are also generated and being debated, just I think as you were just talking about, within that community, right? So you're always kind of negotiating from the margin. Pretty straightforward. And then the other thing, then there's also a bunch of kind of feminists that do this stuff also talk about listening and practices of listening and emotion. This is more on the market one. I just think it's so pretty, so I'm going to make someone read it. But, Dvorah Newmark is she's a performance artist and a writer from Montreal, and she does really amazing... she's worth checking out her website, which I didn't put on here, but if people are interested in interventionist tactics, like she, I think, has just done some really beautiful work, and she's... My favorite one is she sat in Montreal over the meeting of people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the bench.
So sat like in a bench in a park. And she was in a kippah, like a yarmulke, a skullcap, a yarmulke. I think that people who are Orthodox Jewish wear. Every time she would knit in purple, and every time, or it might be the opposite, she would knit in purple, and then every time that someone came up to her to ask her anything, to talk to her about, you know, basically, what are you doing, or hi, how are you? She would switch to gold. And she, so she knit this giant, you know, kippa out of purple and gold. And when someone would ask her, she would talk about her relationship to Judaism and why she was doing it and her family. And sometimes people would just, you know, be like, okay, you're crazy, and leave after 30 seconds. So she'd just have like one bit of gold. And sometimes they would have, she got this whole woman, told her the whole story of her family living under Pinochet. And, you know, for 3 hours they talked, and so then you've got this purple knitted this conversation, right? And I think that even, as thinking of a media practice, so then when she talks about that project, she's talking about these political stories that she's heard, but talking about them through this production of this sort of textile that's there. So I think that's kind of opens up a way, maybe a different way to think about the project. Yeah. Right, so she says this pretty thing. I'll let you read on your own. And so back to Sarah Ahmed, who we kind of started with, also does writes about listening and kind of collectivities. And so for Sarah Ahmed, collectivities are formed through attachments that arise from listening to and becoming touched by others. Here, that pain, anger, and energy and hope of individuals can be woven into a collective consciousness. So I think just this kind of part, so through the work of listening to others, by hearing the force of their pain and the energy of their anger, and learning to be surprised by all that one feels oneself to be up against, through all of this, a we is formed and an attachment is made. So she's kind of interested in sort of how communities are created through the circulations of text and the circulations of objects, and sort of how does... So in terms of thinking about writing practices, I thought that was interesting in terms of thinking about how something that holds together activist communities, I think, is a sense of pain, right, and of suffering. And there is, and I mean, Andrew Dworkin said feminism was a movement to eradicate all suffering. And I think that there is that sort of sense, even though sometimes you don't want to talk about it in that sort of woeful way, you know?
They're sharing also some moments of joy. Women, for example, they have many patients as a model, but men don't share. And many of these things they share are basically joy and some sources of happiness, but a few others to women, and the interactions between them and the environment of men, or their songs, everything.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the sense of maternity, right? Which is a sort of many affect stuff, in the sense of being a mother. And it's beautiful. And the meanings, different meanings it could have, what the inside of me. Not only suffering, right?
No. I think just, but suffering being the, in the what she was saying was sort of suffering being the, if someone had to say a motivation for why they think the world is, you know, fucked up because people are suffering, people are oppressed, people are, so that sort of being this kind of pain that links people, but that the community then forms its attachments, not only out of the pain, but out of the joy that they have in being a community, right? And then, I think, you know, that the hope for Ahmed, hope is the community, is the we, is the links that attach people, right? That's what makes us have hope. And then, you know, just more pretty things. So, you can read. So what I thought that we would do, and we can have questions or discussion now, or we can have questions after. I'm just a little nervous about time, right? About 45 minutes. So, or if you want to do the exercise and then see what happens in the exercise and then have a discussion at the end, might be better for time, but we don't.
Can you explain the exercise?
Yeah, yeah, that would make it useful. So what I was thinking that we would do is in small groups, what I did was I just stripped a story, a news story, about another boat carrying Somalian refugees that capsized and 30 people died on Monday. And stripped it of all the, you know, everything except for the facts of what happened. And then just have various other little bits of information that are kind of background things. So I did the research for this the way that I do research when I write for the alternative media. So this is like, basically, I want to give each group the research that you've already done for your article. And then I want to write an article thinking about either particular things that I talked about in terms of effect knowledge or whatever else you want to think about. And it doesn't have to be written, I think would be cool to also open up the possibility of designing a story that wouldn't be written. So do whatever in like groups and just come up with an idea of how would I write this story up in a way that might kind of play a little bit with feelings and with people's responses and what are the kinds of possibilities. Does that make sense? Does that sound like it might be interesting?
Mm, in a productive way as opposed to manipulative.
If you want to be manipulative, you can be. You have to negotiate that.
When in your piece that you wrote about this workshop, you spoke a bit more about
different kinds of ways of writing.
Don't
really good.
Well, it might be helpful in terms of this.
Yeah. Actually, I have examples. I'll read little bits of. So the three things that I was saying, and I just made up these categories to give you a thing for the workshop. Mm. So I have no affinity to them whatsoever. That stories are propaganda stories, which are things, I think, like what you're saying, sort of this idea of like very manipulative or very direct kind of language. This is from some socialist worker. Let's see, it's kind of good. I mean, really, you could just read anything off of the socialist worker, but without a hint of regret, Blair defended the Iraq war, claiming that it had been caused by alarm at the proliferation of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, a lie which nobody now believes. Blair demanded that Britain be a nation of war fighters determined to use hard power across the globe. Safe from the agony and death he has caused, Blair warned service personnel and their families that conflict and therefore casualties may be part of what they're called upon to face. So this sort of language. Bush and Blair have doomed one generation to war. Now they promise the same for the generation to come. And although he may sometimes use different words, Gordon Brown will sound with them. But on both sides of the Atlantic, opposition grows to the escalation of the war. The Stop the War Coalition in London reports a surge of its own and come to the demonstration. Join it and let's sweep these warmongers away. So that would be a propaganda story. Mm. That's quite direct, not like going through, telling you how to think about something, how to feel about something, and then what you should do about it. I'm not saying this is a bad, I think it's just a style, the genre. Mm. And then I think you kind of have like feature stories where, right, and you see these in the mainstream press all the time, so where you kind of are telling a story through someone's life. So this is from The Guardian. Tatiana fled Kazakhstan 2 years ago. For months, she has been harassed by anti-Russian Kazakhs. It began with telephone death threats and escalated. They skinned her dog and left his remains on her doorstep. They waited outside her workplace and forced her to pay protection money. They told her to leave Kazakhstan or they would kill her. And then it kind of goes on to describe her life. And then, and the stories of other women. And then we forget that from that many of those who do not who do so are, and these are the lucky ones, those who haven't been removed from Britain altogether, perhaps to face torture, poverty, or death. And then she kind of goes on. So she's talking about refugee claimant status, but doing it by telling these very detailed and some graphic stories about the lives of women. So. That being another way to do it, right, which produces, I think, very different kinds of emotions then, you know, stop the warmongers, right?
Not more necessarily empathetic than then sort of angry or against something.
Yeah. And then you can just present a story that is like, here's what happened. Mm. Yeah. So I don't know, do I need to give an example of that? Right. So then there's the here's what happened story. So what I was thinking, at first I was going to have asked people to write like these three different kinds of stories, but then I thought that wasn't very creative and that would be more interesting.
Ways to write, let's say, the more the people more used to write.
I think so. I think there's other things that are more creative or interesting or combining them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and a lot of the I came up with this workshop with a friend of mine who's an editor of an indie newspaper called The Dominion in Canada. And he is a just-the-facts kind of guy. Like, he's just, it's about how you do the research, you get good facts, you tell them, and people, you know, respond because they've seen the better argument. And then I always fight with him that, like, no, you need the stories about the people, and, you know, mm-hmm. you care. Mm-hmm. And then, it came out of talking about that. So I think, yeah, I mean, like, for him, as the editor of that paper, like, he has his newspaper be a certain way. And when he gets stories that aren't like that, you know, he'll kind of ask that things be taken out. He's trying to, you know, bend a little bit, but and I think things like the socialist worker, it assumes that its readership shares certain kinds of values, and so it speaks to them in a certain kind of way. But I don't know, you know, that's just my, I mean, I don't know. Does that sound like something? Do you want to try to?
We did that in Indonesia, and then we're trying to press it down. And one of the things that's wrong with the genre is that we're forever telling people things that they already know. Mm-hmm. And one of our ambitions, I think, should be to tell other people who don't know about the issue and to get them on board with you. And mm-hmm. even to find those regimes and techniques that engage the wider public that aren't into saving whales or hunting birds or trying to save foxes or whatever, yet, because they don't realise the consequences for their own ecology and survival of their grandchildren in due time, right? Mm. And to bring people on board beyond the bare facts. This, that and the other happened last week. It shouldn't be allowed, isn't it awful? And, you know, people like to tell you about it. But that doesn't get people over at all. Right? Mm. I mean, I agree there must be some sense of emotion to bring it to personalise, and especially with, as I said, your grandchildren, didn't I? That's one of the ways that we hope to get information, because about global warming, for example, is very active. And in fact, we like for the next few summers, like, you know, we've written with the humming. But thereafter, that's not going to be the case, right? And, putting the bare facts before the public to say that in 40 or 50 years things are going to be intolerable. Mm-hmm. I think most people know that. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. There's very few people that disbelieve that. But I don't know what my idea is, it's all so daunting. You have to be able to get it down to the individual and down to their grandchildren. I watched a film the other week, The Day After Tomorrow, have you seen that? Mm-hmm. That really is about the individual climatologist. And his son, who was trapped in New York under those events. That's how that method.
Did anyone see when The Independent ran a series of fake front cover headlines, which were like, in 10 years, in 20 years, in 30 years, and, like, big climate change stories, which were like, yeah, crops fail in here, mass migration started, blah, 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 like, wars over water and stuff, and they were really, really emotive. I didn't really read much of them, but I think, I looked through them, it's really interesting. Can't remember whether they were actually on the front cover. I think it was like 2010, blah, blah, blah. And it was really interesting because, you know, they weren't addressing any news issues. They were being persuasive and they were trying to stir emotions. Mm-hmm. Because there was a noble cause for it, they felt like that was worth putting on their front cover, and instead of having another shock horror, what has happened to the environment recently, or a big company's release too many emissions or something. It's more demonstrative of what it actually means to people, or what it should mean to people.
We had an experiment in Germany with a fellow who had an alternative, a mainstream alternative newspaper, which did the whole issue on its 25th anniversary, and the whole newspaper of this day was like 25 years later, like in 2030, and obviously the year number is very small printed. So you have nobody, like you didn't recognize in the beginning, but you had all these kind of more or less similar names of young politicians today who are like whatever, chancellors in 25 years, and then like totally like not too strange stories constructed like on all kinds of issues, like the usual, more or less usual categories of the newspaper. And it's a really good experiment to see like how like really concrete utopia.
Do you want to try the exercise? Do you want to just have a discussion?
Let's do
it. Okay. So I only have three. I've got four copies, I guess. So it might be better. I think smaller groups, bigger groups. Smaller. So then, how many are?
But the idea is.
So the idea is maybe groups of wait, how many?
Three.
Groups of three? Okay, yeah, groups of three. And there's one, and there's one, and I think I should have my original. Okay, so the first sheet, the story must include these pieces of information. It doesn't, you don't need to, like, you know, I don't mean to be dictating.
Yeah, there's more than this.
And then there's the other things that are the other stuff.
Someone might email me about
a
piece
of paper.
I think
that
might be
okay.
So, yeah, so do whatever.
We had this like there yesterday, and a lot of people met you.
Yeah.
Oh, really?